I don't know if you've noticed this yet or not, but there is an increasing shortage of primary care physicians in America. Compared to specialties like orthopedic surgery and anesthesiology, internal medicine practitioners can expect to make only half as much as their colleagues. Most primary care physicians work for hospitals or medical corporations. Very few are left in traditional private practice settings. Family practitioners face a sea of patients every day and can spend very little time with each one. It's sort of like assembly line medicine, according to some physicians. There's a new trend, however, and it's called boutique or concierge medicine. Patients pay a retainer every year, and in return, they get same-day appointments, personal attention, even house calls, and 24/7 access to their physician by email or telephone. Doctors in these practices say this is the way to practice medicine, and their patients tend to agree with them. This hour, we're going to talk about concierge medicine and what it means for the future of medical practice in America. My guest is Tom Blue, Executive Director of the American Academy of Private Physicians. Good morning. Thanks for your patience while we worked out our technical issues here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
How big a trend is concierge medicine? Where are we with this today?
Well, it started back in the late 90s, roughly 1996, out in Seattle, and has gradually expanded at an accelerating pace to where there are now probably in the vicinity of 3,500 private or concierge physicians nationwide, and they're scattered across communities, you know, that you might not think of as being places that would, you know, that would be home to, you know, to private medicine. I mean, they're in, you know, almost rural settings all the way to the largest cities.
What does it cost for someone to access this kind of medicine?
Well, yeah, that's actually a very interesting question and the source of a lot of misperception. The you know, the prices for private medicine range from $50 a month to, you know, to $20,000 or more dollars a year. And, you know, it's very interesting. The very quickly, you know, the media has, you know, began to dub concierge medicine as sort of healthcare for the rich. And, you know, as the industry has matured and evolved, really, you know, in many ways that hasn't played out at all. And what we're finding is that there are private medical practices that are set up specifically to cater to the, you know, to the uninsured, and certainly there are those that are set up to cater to, you know, to busy executives. But the average price nationwide is in the vicinity of $130 or $140 a month.
That's per person.
Per person, correct.
So if I have a family of four, let's say, mom and dad and two kids, the classic nuclear family, probably less common than we expect it is, but so that's $150 times four every month.
Well, for children, it tends to be a little bit different. You know, ordinarily you have, you know, these practices are set up where they, you know, where couples get a little bit of a discount. So probably nationally, the average couple's price is in the vicinity of $200 to $225 a month. And often for kids, you know, they tend to be in the $50 or $60 range per month. And pediatric practices are now beginning to spring up that are, oh, that might creep up into the $100 per month per, you know, per child, you know, range. But, you know, again, it's not you know, it's not the exorbitant cost that a lot of people think it might be.
But I mean, you know, you could be looking at anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 a year just to be able to see your doctor.
Well, you could be looking at $3,000 to $6,000 a year, but I would debate with you whether what you're buying is essentially just the ability to see your doctor. You know, it's,
well, let's talk about private.
Go ahead.
Well, let's talk about what we're buying. What am I getting for that retainer?
Well, these practices in general are set up to, you know, to offer, you know, a couple of sort of categories of benefits that, you know, that turn out to be extremely crucial to, you know, to the delivery of really good medicine. You know, the first and what everybody thinks of are, you know, kind of service and convenience amenities. So these are practices where, because they see fewer patients, they're able to, you know, to eliminate wait times, and you can have telephone and internet and email, et cetera, access to your doctor. You know, many of them make house calls and will come in and extend their office hours to accommodate people. So, you know, so you have sort of the, you know, the convenience and access to the relationship that a lot of, you know, that a lot of patients crave. And of course, this was, you know, in the very earliest days of private medicine, you know, the industry was kind of shaped around patient frustrations with the healthcare system. And if you ask a waiting room full of patients what it is that they, you know, wish they could change about you know, the healthcare system, many of them would, you know, would immediately say, I don't want to wait anymore. As the industry has matured, what's been discovered is that when you reduce the size of a medical practice, you know, which, you know, the overwhelming majority of which are artificially bloated due to the healthcare system kind of bearing down on providers to see more and more patients faster and faster, what you discover is that in fact the quality of the care itself and the type of care, you know, can be considerably enhanced. So today, you know, what we generally find among private physicians is, a demonstrable increase in focus on prevention and the delivery of technologies that, technologies in the form of software technologies and device technologies and lab technologies and protocol technologies, you know, that simply aren't accessible in the, you know, to the general public in the healthcare system because much of it's not reimbursed. And when it is reimbursed, you know, the time required, you know, to process the information that's, you know, that's produced by this type of, you'll call it aggressive preventive medicine or very comprehensive, ongoing care, is, it's something that simply can't be done, you know, on a, you know, for a copay and a, you know, and a small reimbursement. So, you know, more and more the focus of, you know, or the value proposition of private medicine is just a different type of healthcare.
Well, I don't want to dwell too much on the money, but as a health consumer, I'm curious about a few things. So the retainer fee that I pay to the doctor, mm-hmm. is that reimbursable under, say, some sort of flex benefits thing, or can I pay that with pre-tax dollars? Is there some way that I can offset this? Do insurance companies cover this type of care?
Well, you can't submit your retainer fee to a private physician to your insurance company for reimbursement. I mean, in general, these practices tend to be set up where the retainer fee is being paid as a fee for non-covered services. And then there are some practices that are, you know, that are set up that essentially have opted themselves completely off of the insurance grid altogether. And this is their, you know, they have solely a direct financial relationship with patients. But as for paying it through a flex spending or a health savings account, while you can't pay a membership fee or for services that have not yet been rendered, what we're finding is that when practices, you know, sort of design their services and related documentation to be, call it health savings account friendly, that while not covered by insurance, a great deal of what is provided by private physicians is in fact considered by the IRS to be an acceptable healthcare expense. So at the end of the year, for a large portion of many of these fees, a person can reimburse him or herself out of a health savings account and affect the same, you know, the same pre-tax savings.
Okay, so I pay my fee for access to the doctor. What about things like certain types of medical tests? If my doctor and I sit down and we talk about a health condition that I have, and he says, you know, you've got a nerve problem in your neck. We really need to get a CT scan to see what's really going on in there. Right. So I would have to go someplace and get that. I'm assuming that at that point I'm now back to dealing with my insurance company.
Absolutely, yeah. The proposition of private medicine is not to encourage patients to abandon their insurance and expose themselves to financial risk. So you would while many people, you know, in conjunction with joining a private physician's practice, will move into a higher deductible plan, you know, to essentially create premium dollars to underwrite the retainer for the practice. You know, you certainly would keep your insurance for imaging services or hospitalization or anything, you know, just what you described. And in many cases, when you walk into one of these practices with a sore throat, you would pay for, because that's an insurance covered service, you would pay with your insurance. You know, it's important for people that are looking at private medicine to understand that as you shop for it, the doctors who have embarked on this career path, many of them have set up innovative models for their practice that you need to understand on a case by case basis. There, if some people say, if you've seen one concierge medical practice, you've seen one. They do tend to vary a little bit, and so it's important for patients as they're looking at them to make sure that they understand how they work.
We're talking about the new trend, relatively new, I suppose, in geologic terms, everything's new, but the relatively new trend called concierge medicine or boutique medicine. It's also called private practice. And wondering what you think about this. Are you currently involved with this kind of medical service? Do you pay a retainer to see your doctor when you want and not have to wait around? To get more time with your doctor, to be able to call your doctor on his or her cell phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or reach them via email? Is that something that appeals to you? Are you involved in using this type of service now? Wondering what you think. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, and Kathleen Dunn, the Kathleen Dunn Show, also has a Facebook fan page. You can leave a comment on our wall, and I will share it with the listening audience. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and here's what's coming up a little bit later on today. On the Ideas Network, At Issue with Ben Marins after 5, it's a discussion about civil discourse in politics and other contentious subjects on this election day. That's coming up later on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour we're talking about concierge medicine, and my guest is Tom Blue, Executive Director of the American Academy of Private Physicians, and we have some callers on the line who want to join our discussion. We'll start with Tony in Janesville first.
Hello.
Good morning, Tony.
I just wanted to make a comment. I can take comments off the air. I just thought with the cost that people pay for health insurance and, the care that's already being provided, it's just ridiculous to, pay money to be seen at a more convenient time as well. And kind of like a get real statement, like people can actually afford that. And that was all.
All right. Thank you. Tom Blue?
Mm-hmm. I would respond to that, by saying that, this is a service like any other, whether the cable plan that you opt into, the cell phone plan you opt into, that's a value judgment. And certainly not, certainly not for everybody. I mean, there are folks that, that place a value on on their health care and on on a relationship with a physician, and there are many that that haven't confronted health issues and haven't had a reason to kind of escalate that in their in their family value system, so to speak. And I would never expect that we would find that we would come upon a time where where people are forced to forced to opt into something like this. Having said that, if you talk to patients that that consume this type of health care, it's very rare that you find those that that are unhappy or that can't detect the a legitimate difference in both the the quantity and quality of the care that they're getting. So, I think that that Tony's comment's a perfectly appropriate one, and it's certainly not for everybody.
All right, thanks for that call. Let's go to Green Bay and hear what Gina has to say next. Gina, good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering if this model has been applied to any mid-level specialty healthcare practices, such as chiropractic or behavioral health.
In the chiropractic world, not unlike dentistry, there's a great deal of private pay practices, and I almost wouldn't dub those concierge medicine, simply because they've become fairly commonplace. And certainly in the world of chiropractics like dentistry, you find that there's sort of a continuum of patient experiences that these practices are designed to deliver. As for physician extenders and others providing providing concierge medicine, there are some examples of if PAs and nurse practitioners in some states that have struck out on their own to deliver this type of service, and have done that with varying levels of success. Oftentimes they do it in support of a private physician. But anyway, does that answer the question, do you think, John?
Well, we lost our no, Gina, you're still there. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for the call, Gina. Victoria in Blue Mound, you'll be next. Victoria, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to know, does this retainer fee include office visits and unlimited office visits in general?
In general, the for practices that continue to accept insurance, and the majority of those of concierge physicians do accept insurance, the retainer fee does not cover routine office visits. And it's not so much that the doctor is trying to milk the patient for extra money as much as in order to accommodate patients and continue to work within the insurance system, physicians have to abide by their contracts to charge patients as they routinely would for covered services. Now, oftentimes in general, what you'll find as a patient of a concierge physician is the non-covered service offering is very clearly delineated. And it tends to be oriented toward, a very different form of an annual health assessment, and by very different, I mean it's vastly more robust, vastly more lifestyle oriented, and preventive care oriented, and tends to bring to bear a good many labs and technologies that most patients have never encountered, in the primary care setting, and certainly not in a routine checkup that you get.
My opinion is that if they stayed in the primary care setting, we would have less of a shortage of doctors. And it's almost like it appears to be the formula that Sam's Club uses that dupes you into having to pay a user fee to purchase things. And it's kind of disgusting in a way. But anyway, that's the listener's opinion. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Sure. Well, it's interesting, and she brings up a point that you hear a lot about the depletion of the supply of doctors as a byproduct of the proliferation of private medicine, and at least what we find in interactions with medical students contemplating coming into primary care, as well as older doctors in the primary care system, is that the hope of private medicine is an inspiration to medical students that seems to have the potential to stem the tide of these students choosing careers outside of primary care. If you look at trends nationally, the number of doctors progressing through medical school opting into a primary care career is going down, and it's simply because in many's opinion, as a career path and as a business model, primary care is becoming increasingly unsustainable to people. So private medicine holds out hope to those folks, and I would argue has the promise to reinvigorate a good many very high-quality students to pursue this career. On the flip side and on the back end of the career of a physician, what we're finding is that there is a trend towards doctors prematurely retiring, going into hospitalist and medical director and research and consulting careers, again, to relieve themselves of the exhaustion of seeing 2,000-4,000 patients or managing 2,000-4,000 patients every year, and the promise of the private medical kind of career path and lifestyle for physicians has kept doctors into their well into their 60s and 70s practicing medicine when otherwise they would have left. So it's the depletion of the supply of physicians is not really what it I think appears to be on its surface.
Well, there's clearly a pretty big difference between what a primary care physician can make compared to a specialty, say orthopedic surgery. I mean, the difference in wages is incredible, and we're talking about people coming out of medical school with enormous amounts of debt. And having to pay that back. I'm thinking, well, why would anyone choose to be a primary care physician when they could make twice as much money doing something else?
Well, I mean, it's a legitimate, kind of conundrum. And what you generally find is that doctors that go into primary care I don't know that there are any of them that have done it on the basis of of calculating the way to to maximize their income. For very obvious reasons. I mean, us as as lay people listening to this show, certainly understand that that there are a host of subspecialties that that earn more than primary care doctors do. The thing that that I'm just thinking about people listening to this to this conversation that we have to we have to consider is that as patients, the primary care relationship is a very important one, and the extinction of the primary care doctor is a is something that we that we certainly don't want to to see happen. And it's important that that people as they as they see more and more people are in, are working with physician extenders instead of their physicians, and it's a patient frustration. The appetite for for the patient population, particularly among as the, as our population ages, to lock down and have a primary care relationship that they can count on, is of increasing value to people, because there's extraordinary value in what in the function in our healthcare system that primary care fills in containing healthcare costs. So it's a very important issue, and this is a really very productive conversation.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because we didn't start out too well with the technical problems at the top of the hour, but I think we've recovered. Just to be clear, and I wanted to go back to something in an earlier caller mentioned, and you mentioned this, but I want to make sure that I understand it. I pay my annual fee or my monthly fee or whatever, but when I actually go and visit the doctor, I'm going to have to pay for that visit separately from that retainer.
Yeah, for a routine office visit that would be ordinarily covered by insurance, in order for the doctor to continue to accept insurance, and many private physicians do not don't accept insurance at all, which is why it's very important that as patients are are shopping to consume these types of services, that they understand the way the practice works. But as for those practices that continue to accept insurance, they are obligated to to charge for services that are that charge the copay and bill services that are that are covered by insurance. So that's correct.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I had that. Let's go back to the phones, and we've got some lines available now. If you'd like to get in on our conversation at 800-486-8655, Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Sarah, good morning.
Hi. Well, I was calling in response to a previous caller and what your guest said, because in your answer you were just talking about how people choose, like it's just a choice. If you really are serious about your health care and you value your health care, then this is a choice, and it works out really well. And, I mean, yeah, it does work out really well, and given the current state and the way our health care system runs now, unfortunately, I can see how doctors have to go to this in order to have a better practice, and it works out really well for the people who can afford to go to that kind of doctor. I think anyone would love to go to that kind of doctor if they had the money to pay for it, but a lot of people simply don't have the money to pay for it, and it's just another example of how there's unequal access to health care based on your ability to pay, and that's just the state of our health care system, and I think it's... I don't know why your guest doesn't address that at all. He just makes it sound like, well, this is just a great way to run our healthcare system, and it's not, because it doesn't. It's so unfair. It's unequal. That's my comment.
Well, I mean, it's a very legitimate point that this is this represents an incremental cost to people that is that is above and beyond what they're what they're accustomed to paying for healthcare. All I can say is that. There are very few things in in our society that that don't require decision making based on the allocation of scarce resources. So the type of things that we can, type of food we consume, the type of clothes we wear, cars we drive, all of those are a product of value decisions that we make. I would caution people against the against feeling an entitlement to demand that doctors enslave themselves to to the society. And doctors, I will tell you, it's really interesting. I'll tell a story. I was actually sitting at at a cardiology practice that was in the process of transitioning itself into private medicine in Arizona just about a week ago. And there are people in the audience, as with every practice when this type of transition occurs, you hear comments that are that are very similar to the ones that we're hearing on from callers today. All the way to comments from patients who've had wonderful experiences with the doctor who welcomed the opportunity to sort of deepen the relationship. And I can remember one fellow raised this as sort of an ethical issue to the cardiologist, saying you're sort of walking away from patient relationships. And in this case, she had prearranged and in fact hired another cardiologist to see any patients that chose not to pursue this particular path in her practice. But having said that, she responded in a way that I thought made an incredible amount of sense and was actually fairly impactful to everyone in attendance. And that was that, in fact, it is a terrific struggle, has been a terrific kind of value-based struggle for her, because on the one hand, she is, in a sense, taking a step backwards in her practice by reducing its size in order to move forward, providing a level of care that she feels morally compelled to provide. And in the case of heart attack and stroke prevention, I'm not sure there's a better killer of people and medical process that illustrates the incredible divide between what has become accepted standards of care and what is truly optimal care than heart attack and stroke prevention. And this is a cardiologist that's undertaken a great deal of training certainly post medical school to refine her abilities and understanding of preventing heart attacks and strokes, which is something that in fact can be done very effectively. And so the dilemma that she faced in doing this was, on the one hand, reducing her patient panel and moving them to a cardiologist practicing traditional medicine. On the other hand, continuing down a career path of providing care that literally she knew was not the best that she could provide. And so it's a legitimate dilemma, not just for patients thinking about whether this is something that they want to pay for or whether they should alter their insurance to create premium dollars that could be saved to pay for it. It's a dilemma for doctors that dig into the topic of truly optimal care and what they can do for patients and whether they're serving people better by seeing a lot of people very quickly, or whether they're better off, seeing people more slowly and thoughtfully, and just delivering this type of care. So it's a legitimate dilemma for people.
We're talking about the new trend in medicine called concierge medicine or boutique medicine, private practice. It has a lot of different names. My guest is Tom Blue, Executive Director of the American Academy of Private Physicians. One phone line available for you if you call right away, 800-486-8655. This is a complex issue, and we've gotten a lot of interesting responses to this topic this morning, and I'm sure we'll get more as we move along. We've also got some Facebook comments to share and some other stuff. So stick around. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9:44. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next, my guest and I will be talking about a landmark 8-decade study about who is living long and healthy lives and why. The secret to longevity. Coming up next hour here on the Ideas Network. This hour we're talking about concierge medicine. My guest is Tom Blue, the Executive Director of the American Academy of Private Physicians. We have a lot of callers who want to join us. One had to drop off, but he had a question I thought was an interesting question. I'd like you to respond to this. He said, what if I pay the retainer fee and then find out I don't like my doctor?
Well, that's a great question. And what he would find is that patients can opt back out of the vast majority of these programs and get a prorated refund. So, if you're into the program for a couple of months and it's just unsatisfactory to you, then it's you haven't signed your life away in even the way that you would on a cell phone agreement. Sometimes that policy varies based on whether or not you've had your physical, because so many of these practices invest so heavily in the annual health assessment and the cost, the underlying cost of that, that they'll adjust their refund policies on the basis of whether you've had the physical that year. But you're certainly not locked into one.
Okay. Well, I mean, when we talk about, you know, we want to have a more personal relationship with our doctor, and sometimes there's just no chemistry there, and there's no fix for that.
Certainly not.
Let's take another call. This time we'll go to Mike in South Milwaukee. Mike, good morning.
Hi. I'm a retired physician, radiation oncologist, and I think this concept is absolutely ridiculous, and it just reflects a broken-down medical system. And until we have a system where all people have access to good care, i.e., universal health care, schemes like this will continue. This is a reflection of a broken medical system. And I would refer the guest to systems like Sweden, Norway, France, where all citizens have access to this boutique kind of treatment. There are too many specialists making too damn much money, too many insurance companies making too much money, and too many hospitals building Taj Mahals. All you have to do is drive around the city of Milwaukee. I'll listen to the comments.
You know, I have to say, in a way, I don't disagree at all that with what he just said, that was there not a breakdown in the system, both in the ability of doctors to deliver this type of care to patients, as well as have a sustainable career in business, that likely the privatization of medicine in this way would never have come about. I'm not sure that kind of changes the reality that we're faced with, but I really think that he's got a decent point in some ways.
Mike, thanks for the call. Edith in Waukesha, you'll be next. Hello, Edith.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I grew up in Budapest, Hungary, under socialized medicine, and the direct result of socialized medicine was to have private practice doctors who practiced during the day socialized medicine and then quietly told the patient, if you come to my office, which was usually in their home, then I will be able to give you better care and better medicine. And so I am a little concerned about this trend, which I sort of foresaw that was going to be coming.
Well, I think I understand where her concern is, and there's a twofold issue, I think, if I'm hearing her correctly, and some of the other callers. One is there's just the economics of it, and saying, okay, is this something that I can or would have any interest or ability to pay for. The second is, this is maybe more of an undercurrent, but I suspect there's a concern that, in fact, like she experienced in Hungary, there was better care to be had outside of the system, and certainly, none of us want to think that the healthcare we're receiving is anything less than the best that it can be. I'm not surprised that there's some general discomfort among folks that haven't been exposed to this with the concept for both those reasons.
Well, I think though if we throw the terms out, and we talk about the difference between a system where doctors are forced to see thousands of patients and can spend only 15 minutes with each one, and they are constantly answering to corporate accountants and insurance companies who are in the business of saying no because that's how they make money. And we compare that to a doctor being able to practice medicine the way they were trained to do it in medical school, and with a great amount of personal contact with their patients, and being able to see someone for an hour if they need to. you know, okay, those are comparisons that make it pretty obvious which kind of medicine most doctors would. I mean, if you put it to a doctor, hey, would you like to have to see 2,000 patients and only be able to spend 15 minutes with each one and make half the money that a specialist would make? Or would you like to see patients in a setting where everyone's relaxed and you're only going to see 9 patients a day and you'll be able to spend an hour with them if you want? Who's going to choose the first one?
Right. Well, you know, I tell you, it's. I would say that it might surprise people to know how, you know, for how many doctors, private medicine really is not the right, you know, the right path. You know, as we look at a lot of doctors that, you know, that you know, come to our conferences and you know, that we encounter through the course of the year that are thinking about this, you know, when a doctor decides to, you know, to take private pay money for, you know, for services that, you know, that distinguish his or her practice from, you know, from the norm, there's a justifiable and significant expectation among patients that there's something new, different, better than they had before to be, you know, to be had. And there are many doctors that are, you know, that are comfortable in a high production volume environment, and that's you know, and that's, you know, that's the setting that they've, you know, that they've chosen for themselves, and they're just okay with it. You know, they don't want to carry their cell phone and essentially have almost a 24/7 obligation to, albeit a smaller group of patients, but it's a never-ending, you know, kind of weight to carry that, you know, that this particular type of physician is just, you know, is comfortable with and is willing to take on as a part of their, you know, their personal lifestyle. So, you know, it's
well, that brings up another question. If I mm-hmm. if I'm in this relationship with my doctor in a concierge practice, and I call him, I'm going to get a bill for that, right?
No. In general, you know, for telephone, email consults, things like that, you just have unlimited access to your, you know, to your doctor. I mean, provided that you're respectful about it. But no, it's
so it's not like calling my lawyer, in other words.
No, it's that you're not on the clock, you know, like you like you. I'm sure there probably are practices that differ from this, but in the vast majority of cases, no, you're not on the clock. And I'll tell you, it's fascinating, particularly in primary care, to see just how much primary care can be dispensed without a person ever having to come to the office. You know, it's, you know, research has shown that it's, you know, between, you know, a quarter and a half of visits, you know, that could be taken care of remotely by phone, by internet, by email, you know, but because of the way, you know, medical practices are compensated, they have to create visits, you know, to get certain things done that simply don't require that you physically be there. And again, it speaks, I think, to a previous caller's, you know, comment about the brokenness of the system. In many ways, the system's broken, but you know, but it's you know, you're the remote access to doctors is a fantastic amenity with, you know, with one of these types of practices.
I can see where it would be. Let's go to John in Eagle River next. John, good morning.
I'm actually calling you from Mexico via Skype.
Wow.
It's interesting. What this fellow is saying, because I have a lot of number of doctors in my family, and they spend a good deal of their time trying to figure out how to maximize their income. And, of course, some of them have maximized it way beyond what I think is fair. But in this situation, the patient, well, first of all, when you say that the patient can call or email or whatever, that makes me think of, you know, when they started with the ATM machines, they were free too. And then after a while, they started being very expensive. In any event, I'm assuming you know that every visit to a doctor, whether the doctor visits you in the hospital or you visit him in his clinic or office, is a billable event. And it's billable at either a level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 level. Can you talk about these levels some, and whether or not this kind of practice is going to have any effect on how the billing gets done when the doctor does his charting and decides that it's a level 3 visit or a level 5 visit?
Yeah, the way that both patients' insurance works in practices that continue to, you know, to accept and bill insurance, the way that the patient's insurance works and the method in, you know, by which doctors bill insurance doesn't change. a level one visit would in a concierge practice would be the same as a level one visit in a traditional practice. So, this is not a business model that is in any way designed to manipulate the insurance system or to milk the system for more money. And in general, these practices, you participate with insurance as much as to accommodate patients who are comfortable in that and in that type of environment as anything else. So I hope that answers the question. But there would be no difference in the way that doctors chart or bill.
John, we're running out of time, and I have one more call I really want to get to before we close. But thanks for joining us. Let's go to Judy in Milwaukee next.
Hello.
Hi, Judy.
I enjoy this program. I agree with the people who say the medical system is unfair, but I also have made choices in my life not to have cable service and to have a small gas-efficient car so that I could spend more on medical care. So I went to your website, and I put in Wisconsin, and you don't have a single physician listed. Is that possible?
Before we got on this call, I actually went out to see if we had any member listings in our directory in Wisconsin, and actually, I think you're right. We don't have anybody in the membership that's in the state. Now, that's not to say there are no private physicians there, and as a follow up, I may hunt down some that may not be members, and maybe provide them back to the station so that you could have some. But yeah, we actually don't have any members in the state of Wisconsin.
Remind me again about how many members are in this kind of your organization has, and then how many total private practices like this do you think there are in the United States?
We estimate that there are about 3,500 in the U.S. and in our organization, a little under 1,000 of them are actually members of the organization. So we don't represent 100% of private physicians, and for that reason, there very well may be some in Wisconsin that just have never joined our organization.
Is there any friction between private practices and hospitals? Hospitals are often part of corporate medical providers, and they get to determine who can have hospital privileges. Have you noticed any conflicts like that?
We really have not. In fact, we've got a number of hospitals that offer executive health and concierge programs, within their own primary care networks. I mean, here in Virginia, for example, the executive health group is the executive health arm of HCA, which is a very large hospital system. I don't know if they're up in your area. So I think increasingly, hospitals are looking at private medicine as, another offering that appeals to some patients, and so there's really not at least that I've seen any considerable friction there.
Well, and that's where we'll have to leave it. Tom Blue, thank you very much for spending this hour with us. Sorry it got started late.
Oh, no problem. It was a pleasure. I thank you.
Tom Blue, Executive Director of the American Academy of Private Physicians. Chrissy Peace produced this hour of programming. Katie Mattson handled on-air production. Stick around. We have another hour left. We're going to talk about what goes into having a longer life after the news coming up next. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.